deadly virus sparks alarm worldwide, including here in Florida. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we answer your questions about the spread of coronavirus. What are your thoughts and comments? Call us up right now. It's 549-2937 to join us. Then later, the state of Florida's film industry, plus a look at what's happening all around town this weekend. But first this morning, most Florida residents say they're more worried right now about the spread of the flu than the deadly coronavirus that is sparking alarm worldwide. Florida's health department won't confirm how many residents in this state it's even tested for the virus. And as a couple of passengers aboard an overseas cruise ship passed away after being quarantined on board with the virus, what does that mean for the cruise industry here stateside? There's a lot to look at. Dr. Anthony Ouellette is a professor of biology and chemistry at Jacksonville University and an expert on the spread of infectious diseases. He joins us now. Dr. Ouellette, good morning.
It's good to be here in Studio 5.
Thank you for being here. What are your questions about the spread of coronavirus and whether Americans should have a concern or not? It's 549-2937 to join us, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaNJax. Okay, so we've heard so much about this in recent weeks, but for those that haven't really followed it closely, can you begin by explaining what this virus is exactly and why it's so dangerous?
Sure, yeah. It's a coronavirus, and there's hundreds of different types of coronaviruses that we know that live in birds and mammals throughout the world. So just coronaviruses in general account for about 25% of all colds in the United States. So So they're common, they live in animals, and sometimes these viruses will jump the species barrier or spill over. And so that we saw that first in SARS for these coronaviruses, and that's about 17 years ago. And that came from animals, and there's evidence that it was actually, that type of coronavirus was jumping into humans for a number of years. And finally, it turned into one that became human-to-human transmission. Now, this new one is remarkable in the number of infections that have occurred in a very short period of time.
And why? Why is this one spreading so rapidly?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a new piece of that puzzle that was just published yesterday, actually. And so when the virus binds to your lung cells, they have a spike protein on the outside, and that spike protein binds to a particular receptor. And different viruses bind to different receptors. This one binds to receptors that are in our lung cells and are in our GI tract. And so when it does that, that gains entry to the host cell, and then it converts that cell into a virus-producing factory, essentially. And so the evidence that was published yesterday shows that the spike protein, the structure of that, it actually binds to your human cells about 10 times more tightly than, for example, SARS. So if it binds 10 times more tightly, that means you need a lot smaller number of those viruses to actually make somebody sick. And so So if people are getting sick more easily and they have a large amount of the viruses being produced, then it's much easier for when somebody coughs to spread it to somebody else.
You can just transmit it by a cough, in other words.
That's right. And even if you cough and you cough into your hand and then you touch something and somebody else touches that and then they put it in their nose or their mouth, they can get infected that way as well.
Okay. And it's 549-2937 to join us as we talk about coronavirus with Dr. Anthony Ouellette of JU. The symptoms are similar to the flu, right, and other respiratory illnesses. So how can you even know which one you have?
So the flu infects both the lower respiratory and the upper respiratory tract. And so a lot of people with the flu will also be sneezing. And so this one is mainly, it's a fever initially, and then it proceeds to a dry cough. And then that comes to shortness of breath. And then it can get to the point where you get pneumonia and actually other organ damage as well.
Okay. And so it's contagious. It's more like the flu than SARS or MERS. Severity varies. But we've seen thousands of people dying around the world. And that is concerning enough that here in Florida, increasingly people are asking questions about how the testing is proceeding here, what state health officials are doing to prevent contamination here on our shores. Florida's health department has not been very forthcoming with that information. They're not letting us know how many people they've even tested.
That's right. And that, from a public health standpoint, that is their call. From the federal government's regulations. They do have travel restrictions for people coming in. So if you've been to China in the last 14 days and you're not a U.S. citizen, you're not getting into the United States. And so that's one way to keep it out. Now, it doesn't mean that somebody wasn't interacting with somebody who's been to China. And that's how this really can spread dramatically. And so, you know, the number of cases in Florida, we're not privy to, that's for sure. But, you know, my guess is that there's a number of cases in the United States that we just don't know about right now.
Okay. What are your questions about coronavirus? And are you more worried about the flu this year? A recent poll said that's what Floridians are really scared about. It's 549-2937 to join us. It is flu season, Dr. Ouellet. With all of the mania and concern about this virus, maybe now's a good time to talk about the flu as well. People die of the flu every year too.
That's right. And there's been more than 14,000 people that have died in this country from the flu this particular season. And that any particular season is between 12,000 and 65,000 people, Melissa. So it is a true killer in the United States. And, you know, tens of millions of people get infected. We've already had a couple hundred thousand people in this country that have been hospitalized for influenza. And so fortunately, we do have vaccines. Their effectiveness on any given year is between 40 and 60%. And that's because there's different types of flu that circulate. However, mm-hmm. one thing that's important, if somebody thinks, well, if it's only going to be 50%, that's a 50-50 chance. Well, it is, but at the same time, the more people that get vaccinated, the higher number of people will not be carriers. And so if you want to look at it from a non-selfish standpoint, if you don't get the flu, then you can't give it to a kid. You can't give it to the elderly. You can't give it to somebody who has been immune compromised. And so if one person is a bulwark, so to speak, that cannot get it, then I may be with 10 people and one of those people were sick. Maybe five of us don't get it because of having the flu shot. And so we won't spread it to other people.
Let me ask you about the cruise ship industry right now, too. Of course, we have a cruise ship terminal here in Jacksonville, Florida, has a thriving cruise ship industry around the state. Two passengers in Japan who were quarantined aboard a cruise ship have died. This has really led to concerns among people that would ordinarily maybe book a cruise that they might not make that booking now. How do you see this virus affecting the cruise business?
That's a hard call, and I'm certainly not an economist. I really don't know much about the cruise business, but you know, people, you need to have somebody that has coronavirus to spread it. And so that's the key. And so when people come in, like the one in Japan that you were just mentioning, you know, that is in the area of the world where there are people traveling widely that have this coronavirus. And that's a really unfortunate situation, that whole deal. But in terms of, you know, whether you should book a cruise or not, or how worried you should be here in Florida, that's something I really don't know.
But, you know, it speaks to the global nature of travel and how hard it can be to lock people down and stop them from moving around the world to stop the spread of this deadly virus, because the very nature of people is that they move around. And in China, you've got millions and millions of people on lockdown. It's easier, I guess, for an authoritarian government, not a democratic society like what we have, to do that.
That's right.
But the freedom of movement, people have an expectation that they'll be able to move around. And then when a disease like this breaks out, to stop it, you've got to stop people from moving.
This whole, you know, SARS was the first, 17 years ago, SARS was the first one that we really saw get jet set around. That's the first one we saw some people get an infection from a plane trip. And that's how it traveled so widely. If we go back to 1918, during the World War, when we were that influenza pandemic around the world that killed so many people, we were sending troops overseas and people were full of flu. And people were on the ships, they were dying on the ships over there. And so, you know, if we think about modern travel, it's just so much faster. But we can go back 100 years ago to see that quick. And, you know, the term quarantine comes from 40 days from Italian, from plague ships that would be coming in off the coast of Italy. So you know, these cruise ships that we see now, the original where quarantine comes from, you know, this is, in a lot of ways, this is nothing new.
So quarantine was a reference to 40 days.
That's right.
Keeping people in place for 40 days.
That's right. And it's not that they knew that the plague had an incubation time of 40 days, but they knew enough about diseases because, you know, I mean, it was a long time ago, but there were a lot of smart people doing a lot of smart things back then. And so they knew that if nobody was sick after 40 days, then they were fine.
Let's go to some calls now for Dr. Anthony Ouellet of JU about coronavirus and the spread of flu this flu season too. What are your questions and concerns? It's 549-2937. John is along Heckscher Drive. Hey, John, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I've got a friend, a good friend who's credible, that's of Asian descent, who's traveled recently over to Vietnam and near the China area, who's telling me, and I'm finding other reports on the internet, that there is many, many more people dying from this disease than we're hearing on mainstream news reports, literally in the tens of thousands, and that the Chinese government is suppressing it for obvious reasons. And, you know, I just wondered if y'all have any information that, you know, might corroborate that and just exactly how bad is the coronavirus, really? I mean, like you said, Melissa, they're quarantined hundreds of thousands of people.
Millions, actually. Millions, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm being told that there's a lot more death than is being reported.
Okay, John. Well, of course, the statistics that we are getting information about say that about 2,000 people have died so far. What about his concern that the number might actually be higher?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right to be concerned about that. So these are confirmed cases, and actually the what is being considered a confirmed cases has been a moving target for Chinese officials, and so they changed it dramatically the first definition required that you be tested positive for the genome of the virus. That's very clear. You have had it. You've got the genome, no doubt. And then they opened it up to more clinical symptoms and chest x-rays or CT scans. And so then all of a sudden the numbers went way up. Well, just yesterday they changed it again to take away some of that. And so the numbers went down. Kind of not a rule of thumb really, but in general, when you think about confirmed cases, a lot of epidemiologists just assume that for outbreaks like this, there's actually 5 to 10 times more people that actually have it than do. And so the number of deaths and, you know, case fatalities then is also expected to increase by a certain amount. So when we look at the number of 75,000 confirmed cases, I think to myself, it may be more like 1 million.
And wow.
So the number of, and that's also when it first came out, there were probably a lot of people that were sick that just thought they had the flu and maybe it just went away because 80% of the cases of this are mild. And so even the initial case definition may have just missed so many people. So
how does this compare then to other outbreaks you've studied like SARS, MERS, Ebola? How much is this more serious? How do you rate it?
Yeah, so in terms of mortality rate, and again, that's a definition that really, you know, there's case fatality rate, confirmed cases, and then the number of those cases that are dead. And those are hard numbers. But then there's all these other cases that we know are out there, and we just don't have the hard numbers on them. And so so the mortality rate of SARS was between 10 and 15%. MERS is about 35%, and seasonal influenza way lower than 1%. So when people say that this is not as deadly as SARS or MERS, I would agree from a case fatality. But if you look at just the raw numbers of people that have been killed by it, I would say that, in my opinion, it's still a very deadly virus.
We'll go to some more calls in a moment for Dr. Anthony Ouellette of JU about the spread of coronavirus. Here are some tweets for you. Did the unfounded hype and misinformation about Ebola from a few years ago lead to complacency about coronavirus?
Complacency. So the complacency may be government or maybe healthcare providers. Maybe so the complacency. You know, who's being complacent would be unclear with that. But you know, Ebola is very different in terms of a lot of people. Like when you're talking about there's not a small number of people. When you're talking about Liberia, when you're talking about the Democratic Republic of Congo, there's actually been an Ebola outbreak for the last year and a half. And so we don't hear that
we
much
don't
about
hear
that
about it.
Because it's basically not our problem. And there's not a lot of people going in there. One, it's a very violent area. If people aren't going in and going out, then it's their problem. Even though the United States did, you know, put up a lot of money early on for Ebola outbreaks, but that's really tapered off. And so
Ebola is seen as a faraway problem. Coronavirus is getting uncomfortably close to the Western world.
It is. And I would say that, you know, back to one of the callers earlier too, that with the number of cases that we see, I think we may be on the cusp of something bigger. I think that we're seeing now every day more people, more deaths and more people get infected. There's this one group in South Korea, a church that One person had it, and looks like 90 people are now infected, and there were over 1,000 people at that church. And so people going elsewhere are going to infect other people.
You can be infected and survive it, let's be clear.
Oh,
it's
yes.
not automatically a death sentence.
Oh, no, that's right. 80% of the cases are mild. You know, it's just when the numbers rack up in terms of how many are infected, you're going to get those deaths.
And here's a tweet from Brian. Is our country doing all it can to stop the spread? That's the question most people in this country have.
I think the travel restrictions, they were pretty contentious, particularly with China. I think that was a good call. There's only so much you can do because so many people travel, unless you're going to absolutely close every port, every airport, every rail station. You know, people are going to come in that may have it.
What are your questions about coronavirus? Dr. Anthony Ouellette of JU is a professor of biology and chemistry, and he has studied the spread of infectious diseases through the years. How does this rank to past outbreaks? That's what we're trying to discuss right now. Give us a call at 549-2937. Kai is in White House, Florida. Where's that, Kai? Good morning.
Not Kai, darling. K. K-A-Y.
K. Okay. They told me it was K-A-I. So good morning to you.
Well, listen, I would like to know, does it affect women more than men? Does it affect different minorities, different ethnic groups? I don't hear anything about that. I would like to know.
Okay, sure. Are some groups more susceptible than others?
Wow. So that's a very interesting question. I have no idea. I do know that age groups, we can say that unusually children have not been hit as hard as we may expect. The elderly, as we expect, have been hit hard, and people with underlying medical conditions have been hit hard. But in terms of different, you know, kind of genetic makeups from our descent, I've seen no, or gender. I've seen no information on that.
Okay. So basically, if you have a compromised immune system, that's really the biggest concern that we need people to know.
That's right.
Okay. Calls are now flowing into the show about coronavirus. You know, we have heard a lot about this on national NPR and national media. We decided to talk about this today because there are just enough local questions that we felt we should speak to a local specialist on infectious diseases, even though a recent poll shows most Florida residents are more concerned about the flu at this time of year than they are coronavirus. But let's go to a few more calls. It's 549-2937 to join us. Richard is downtown. Hi, Richard. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. One of the things that scares me, or would scare me if I did a lot of traveling, is to get on a plane. You don't know where that plane's been. You don't know who's been on it, then where they've been. And it's very difficult to completely and totally sanitize the entire plane. And the air is circulating through the air system in the plane. And I don't know. It seems like traveling on a plane is a pretty risky deal. I know we've already found out that cruise ships is a risky deal. Planes seems like they'd be risky, too.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Richard. Plane travel.
Yeah, well,
spread of germs on planes.
That's right. So a lot of like seats that are soft, they absorb a lot of things and don't release them so much. The hard surfaces where people are touching all the time, that's definitely of concern. So the kind of disinfection protocols that are occurring right now, I would expect should be higher than normal. I don't have any information of whether they are or not. I actually hadn't thought about those disinfection on planes, but the circulating air, that's one of the things that remain to be seen. This is not shown to be a truly airborne disease, which means that, so for example, if you cough and sneeze, there's this stuff, well, if you cough, for example, from this, there's the stuff that emanates from you that can go, you know, up to 6 feet. And so if you cough at somebody and you're within 6 feet, you can breathe it in. Then there's other things called aerosolized droplets, and those get really, really small, and those can float around in the air for quite a long period of time, and they can travel great distances. Right now, we don't have evidence that this particular disease is transmitted by those floaty dealies that are kind of around in the air. It's more of that projectile kind of from the person. And so, however, you know, it's amazing how fast this is happening. When I think about the fact that this has only been really in our 7 weeks that we've been knowing about this, it's still really early to know everything about this. So when I say we don't have evidence that it's truly airborne, that doesn't mean that it's not. But also, you know, making up every possible scenario, you know, generally doesn't do us any good. But I think that there's a reason to be cautious about getting on any type of transport where a lot of people get on it.
Right. Be cautious. And at the very least, do all the common sense things that your mom told you to do your whole life. Wash your hands.
That's
is
right.
The biggest one.
Yeah.
Frequent hand washing can ward off a lot of disease. 549-2937. Sherry is in Jacksonville. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. My son-in-law lives in Beijing. He's Chinese. And he tells us that the city is still on lockdown for the most part. He's only allowed to go out and get groceries every so many days. And there's more deaths. And he claims there's more people infected that are not even being reported in Beijing.
Mm.
But I was wondering if it was to happen here in the United States, would our cities go on to lockdown similar to that in China?
Sure. And yeah, thank you, Sherry. And I hope your son is going to be all right. Thanks for sharing that. I don't think people really in this country can even grasp what it's like in these major cities in China right now, where millions of people are effectively prisoners in their own homes, are not allowed out on the streets. And we don't have the kind of government that could really, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in this country at the scale they're seeing in China.
No. And well, we don't have cities that are on the scale of what we see in China. Our major cities are, you know, not as big as Wuhan, the epicenter of this. And so when you have massive numbers of people, you know, really tight in tight quarters, and there's a lot of animals around, which is also how a lot of these diseases spread. It is amazing. And the pictures that are coming out and all the social media from people that are there, it's like ghost towns. It's really, really amazing. And so putting, you know, the idea of if this were to come and start spreading in the United States, I mean, you know, the National Guard could start being deployed to keep people, you know, inside. It's like, you know, when the hurricane comes there, think of that as a very low level example of what could happen. Like one of the initial things, you know, if we go back to yellow fever way back in the day, Jacksonville, there were some trains that were leaving more central and South Florida, and people that had yellow fever were on it that were going to be coming to Jacksonville. The public came out, the government came out, and they did not allow trains to stop here. They said, keep on moving because we don't want your yellow fever. And so they kept on moving. And so in Jacksonville, they were burning trash to try to ward off this evil air. And so Jacksonville does have a history way back. But in terms of modern times, I would say that when we think about, you know, hurricane and the National Guard being deployed, that's more of what we would see.
Okay. So yeah, that gives you an idea of it. We've all seen these dystopian movies about a horrible disease outbreak that kills everybody. But the reality is that it would be more like what you're saying. It would be the hurricane protocol, I guess, if we were dealing with this on a large scale. Bob is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning. I just recently returned from a trip to England, and I noticed a lot of people over there wearing masks who had really no clue on what kind of mask to wear or how to wear a mask. What I was wondering is the local medical community thinking about creating some sort of training program on when a mask might be advised and how to use one?
Thanks, Bob. Yeah. Thanks for that. So people, he saw people overseas wearing face masks. Let's talk about face masks for a minute.
Yeah, so there's the two most common types are surgical masks, which are loose fitting. They're meant to contain what's in your breath from, you know, getting on somebody that's from getting into a surgical patient. And then they're used more commonly. And then there's the N95 respirators. They're the tight fitting ones. They often will have a little device on them to really filter out 95% of the particulate matter. So 95%, that still means 5% gets in. But those face masks are really good at keeping your disease to you. And they can be effective on, you know, preventing it from getting to you. So if somebody coughs near you and you've got it, that will prevent a lot of it, but it doesn't prevent everything from getting in. And so the proper use of these masks is something important. I do agree that if we were to see something come here, that it would be great to see local health professionals start giving more tutorials. And there's some really good infographics at the CDC showing, you know, this is the way you're supposed to wear this.
Okay.
And in terms of England, if you think about it, so why England? You know, we've got this one example of this person who was at a conference in Singapore, and it turns out he contracted it. He went skiing in the Alps, and there he gave it to at least 11 people. Some of those people went to England, some went to France, and one went to Spain. And so then when those people go and they hang out with somebody and give it to other people, and so once you start seeing the spread somewhere, you know, the idea of getting a face mask, which is very normalized in many parts of Asia because it's not uncommon, it's very unusual. You know, if people start wearing a lot of face masks around here, it's going to be very odd for us.
Yeah, we're not used to seeing that here.
No, that's right.
We have a question about face masks. A listener tweets, I don't want to sound like an internet conspiracy theorist, but shouldn't America be talking about the growing prescription drug medical supplies back order situation? Is it a Chinese supply issue? Is coronavirus a contributing factor? What about the trade war? I don't want to sound alarmist, but N95 masks and some prescriptions seem to be on indefinite back order locally. Could the USA tool up for our own needs and the needs of the rest of the world if China were to falter?
Oh my goodness, that is a great question. I think that, so, and I don't know the answer to that. I'm not following that at all, but I think that is definitely a concern. And with this global trade and having all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, for certain things, that is always an issue. It's just like if you grow one type of crop and that type of crop only, and it's one genotype, if a disease comes in, everything kills it. So if you need all of one type of thing or most of one type of thing from one place and that goes down, then yeah, what are our backups? And
yeah, those are questions that we really don't know the answer to because we've never had to deal with something like this in the modern era on a large scale.
And that I think has been part of a variety of national conversations for a while in terms of globalization versus making sure that our country has everything it needs and is, you know, self-sustainable in many ways.
Ricardo emails us, can your guest discuss what protocols exist in Florida and the U.S. to contain epidemics in an emergency or catastrophic situation? You talked about that a minute ago, Dr. Ouellette, but let's talk a little more about what protocols are in place in this country to contain the spread of a really dangerous disease.
Yeah, so it really, the most effective ones, and so the most effective ones are the classical old school, isolate the sick and quarantine those that are exposed. And that by and large, although there are variations, there are other things can happen, those are the go-to methods. And so isolate the sick, quarantine the exposed.
And we've never seen the kind of scenario you talked about a minute ago with the National Guard in the streets, ordering people into their homes, locking them down. We've really never seen that. Hopefully we never will.
We've seen a glimpse of that when Ebola came to our shores a few years ago. So
where was that done?
In New Jersey. There was a nurse that came in and she was relegated to, she was working with patients in Africa where the Ebola was, and there was no evidence that she had it. And when she came over, the government of New Jersey decided to quarantine her. Like right at the airport, and I mean away from everybody. And then there was one in Maine, and I forget which one is, but one of them became known as Ebola nurse, right? Mm. So how horrifying is that? And the person never had Ebola, you know. And so this became, and that person successfully sued the state of New Jersey for essentially locking her down when there was no legitimate reason to do so. You know, there's self-quarantine, which is right now, if you come in, if you're a United States citizen, you come in and you've been to China and you do not have the signs or symptoms, you are told to self-quarantine. And so then the question is, do you actually do that or do you not? Right. Yeah. Whereas if you come in and you have signs and symptoms, then you're being isolated.
But the bottom line is, in our increasingly globalized world, after the threat of this virus fades, we need to be ready for more outbreaks like this. They will keep cropping up.
They will, absolutely. And if you think about influenza, at one time, influenza was not a global thing, right? And so over the years, it certainly expanded. And so since we know coronaviruses are stable in the human population that cause colds, I think there's every reason to believe that this could just become a stable virus that we just become used to.
Really good insights from you. Thank you for joining us, Doctor.
It's been my pleasure.
He's Dr. Anthony Ouellette, a professor of biology and chemistry at JU. Still to come, a forum focused on TV, film, and digital media, plus music today in Jacksonville. We'll tell you about it next. Thank you. One second. the spread of coronavirus. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, why critics say the Florida Department of Health hasn't been transparent enough in educating the public about coronavirus. Also, an important ruling when it comes to restoring voter rights for the state's ex-felons.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT invites you to join us for an evening with Ari Shapiro. On Thursday, April 2nd, award-winning journalist and weekday co-host of All Things Considered, NPR's award-winning afternoon news program, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for an engaging conversation. Visit wjct.org/events for ticket information. Sponsored by the Community Foundation of Northeast Florida.
Welcome back. Well, business innovator John Spence speaks tonight at the Jacksonville Women's Network Annual Speakers Forum. His topic, the future of work. Really interesting stuff. He gave me a short preview. What are some of the things you'll be talking about? What is the future of work?
There's a couple of big trends I'm looking at. Hyper-customization, the death of distance, artificial intelligence, robotics, and several other things that are going to impact businesses today and in the very near future.
Let's take those one by one. What is hyper-customization?
Well, this is the fact that we're all used to Amazon and Google and Airbnb, where we can get anything we want at any time we want it from anywhere in the world right now or even before we ask for it. So consumers are now demanding that they get exactly the product they want delivered to them exactly when they want to, wherever they are. And they don't want anything that's like anybody else's. They want it to be just mine.
And companies have to recognize that. Now, you're also tracking big developments in computer speed. What should we know about that?
That it's going to continue to get faster and faster and faster, which means that big data and analytics, algorithms, AI are going to get faster. But as an example, right now, the fastest computer in the world, regular supercomputer, does 380,000 trillion operations per second. But the new Google quantum computer does it on a magnitude much larger than that. They gave the Google computer a problem that a supercomputer would take 10,000 years to figure out, and it did it in 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
Mm. It's amazing the pace of change and the pace of constant technological improvements and innovations. It's hard for companies to keep up, isn't it?
It's extremely hard. Another thing is the hyper-customization is also for your employees. If this is what they expect in their normal life, to be able to Amazon Prime, get anything you want, LinkedIn, I can get to anybody I want to, then they go into the company and say, why don't I get these super advanced technological tools that make it easy for me to do my work anywhere I am, anytime I want, and not have to come to the office. So flexibility, and the other thing is upskilling. Right now, the thing we see is companies have to invest in training their people so they don't get caught in a skills gap where they can't use the new technology that's coming out so quickly.
That's a short preview of John Spence speaking tonight about the future of work. This kicks off at 5 p.m. at UNF's Herbert Center. You can learn more at jackswomensnetwork.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. A forum happening downtown today focused on TV, film, digital media, and music is going to be a really dynamic event. Todd Rubin is manager at the Jacksonville Film and Television Office. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here, Melissa.
Thanks for coming. So this is happening today. It's free downtown at the Main Library at 12:30, the Jacksonville Television, Digital Media, and Music Forum.
Yes.
Seems self-explanatory. TV, digital media, and music. It sounds cool. What all's on the agenda?
Well, number one, like you said, it's free. It's in the Hicks Auditorium in the Main Library. Kicks off at 12:30. We have three panels. Each panel is approximately 50 minutes each, 25 minutes of the panelists, and then Q&A with the audience. First panel is movies, entertainment, and music. We've got amazing DJ Dr. Doom from The Beat. He's also the music director and official DJ of the National Funk Fest concert tour for the last 16 years. He's produced Grammy Award-winning artists. He manages them as well. Keith Davis, owner of Ham Squad, that's known all over the country. He produces as well music and is broaching in the television industry. Colby Boothman is an actor and a heavy bass DJ that travels around the country. He's been in Jurassic World, Queens and Slim, another Star Wars Battlefront series. So they're going to be talking specifically about, you know, the music and television. Then we have music scoring and licensing with Damian Starkey, who has scored for numerous television shows. In motion pictures, for instance, American Pie Reunion, Freeheld, Bar Rescue, so those that are really passionate about how they get into this industry should be there as far as music and then television. We have also Warren Skeels, who is the creator of the MTV series called Siesta Key, which is in its third season. He's also executive producer and director. Jacksonville, he just commutes down to Siesta Key, and Lawrence Najem, who's the attorney, who is also a producer on that show. They're going to share the story from its very origination, from the creation of it, the pitch to the executives. Now they're in their third season. So this is, to me, a mini South by Southwest is what we hope to grow this. That's why we're starting off today. It's free. And so next year, we're going to grow it bigger and bigger. So that's what we were looking
at. So if you're looking to get into any of these creative fields, this is a great and free event where you can learn a lot more and make some great contacts. Now, this is happening at noon, just as people will be getting out of a service honoring the late Mayor Jake Godbolt down the street at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. Jake Godbolt started the Film Commission, as you know, Todd, in Jacksonville back in the early 1980s.
That's right. 1981, that's when the Film Commission was started. He basically created the Mayor's Film and Television Advisory Commission and allowed the head of that, back then it was Dale Eldridge, go to New York along with Lou DeGusto, who worked back then with Florida Production Center, and they would court the film industry. Jake Godbolt, who was the mayor at that time, of course, just was said, here are the tools, go out, market it, and here we are today, goodness gracious, 30-plus years later with the Film Commission. And so we're very excited with what he started from way back then. And so have fond memories of Mayor Jake Godbolt, who was extraordinarily supportive of this industry.
Sure. Now, I know you can't comment on pending legislation. There have been moves in Tallahassee to restore film incentives here in Florida because other states, particularly Georgia, are stealing all the business away. Florida has lost dozens of major film and TV projects over the years. How hopeful are you that at some point Florida can pull some of that business back?
I am very optimistic that we're moving in the direction to get back into that, to attract more business to the state and here in Jacksonville. So I feel that certain things that are happening, and we're just optimistic that that will hopefully transpire, that will the ultimate results will, we hope to have a program back over there in Tallahassee that will attract this business to ultimately Jacksonville.
The film and TV business is a clean industry, and it employs people in good-paying jobs. When a production comes to a community or a state, it pumps a lot of money into that economy.
Oh, yes. I mean, just the productions that we assisted this past year, we track all the productions that come to Jacksonville, well over 100 productions, hiring, you know, with roughly about $2.5 million just on the projects we permitted alone here in Jacksonville. I mean, we've assisted commercials for Blue Shield of California, that, you know, and of course, locally, the Blue Shield of Florida. But I mean, those are very significant budgets that are hiring local crew, putting local vendors to work, and it trickles down to the mom and pop stores, the dry cleaners, and it's a wonderful business, and we've seen. We've seen the positive results from that. Yes, indeed. And we're going to continue to do that.
And so, yeah, you're always trying to tout the benefits of shooting in a city like Jacksonville. Particularly, I know over the years you've sold the city to filmmakers because we have a downtown footprint that can be made to look like lots of other cities and also look kind of old fashioned, maybe from the 40s or 50s. We have a lot of those old buildings. Jacksonville can stand in for other places.
And you know, it's certain movies, John Travolta and Salma Hayek, Jared Leto, James Gandolfini. We're in a movie called Lonely Hearts. We doubled for Utica, New York from circa 1948 to 1952. Uh-huh. The movie Brenda Starr with Timothy Dalton and Brooke Shields many years ago. We doubled for the Amazon River. That was back down in Black Creek. In fact, the Lonely Hearts movie, they doubled for Utica, New York, and Riverside. So Hannah Park doubled for the Amazon as well. So we've got beautiful logistics here in locales. They have doubled for South America, for New England. You know, Pippi Longstocking that filmed in Fernandina and as well as Jacksonville. The movie G.I. Jane, you know, we doubled for with Demi Moore that was directed by Ridley Scott. So we doubled for Fort Polk, Louisiana. And so we've got Tigerland with directed by Colin Farrell was in that, directed by Joel Schumacher. We doubled for another state as well.
There have been many examples over the years. So in the meantime, today at noon, it's the free Jacksonville Television Digital Media and Music Forum. It's at the Hicks Auditorium at the Downtown Main Library, sponsored by the city's film and television office. If you're looking to get into the business, this is a great opportunity. So Todd Rubin, always good to see you. Thanks for letting everyone know about this. I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. So again, that's today at 12:30 at the Main Library. In a moment, Matt Pittman will stop by with some ideas for your weekend, including a concert in your living room. We'll tell you about that too. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Stay with us.
I'm Courtney Lewis. Join the Symphony Chorus, the UNF Chorale, world-class vocal soloists, and the Symphony as we present another Beethoven masterpiece, his Mass in C. We'll also perform music from Stravinsky's charming Pulcinella. February 21st and 22nd. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
When your job isn't to make the arts and the music and the movies, but to make sure the rest of us can enjoy it.
Nobody makes $1 million working in an independent film house. And particularly for our front of house staff in a city like Nashville, they're mostly working artists.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The ups and downs of this economy, our series, The United States of Work, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In his new film, Ordinary Love, Liam Neeson plays a man whose wife is diagnosed with breast cancer. It's something he's had to deal with in his own family.
I've had 4 relations who died of breast cancer. I know how it affected me, and it was very easy to kind of channel that.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Around Town is brought to you by St. Augustine Distillery, handcrafted small batch spirits.
Welcome back. How about this idea? A concert in your living room. Bold City Circuit places live music performances in living rooms across the city, and they're planning one for next Monday night featuring the Balesmen, a gypsy jazz group from New York. Pamela Burkrant is here with a preview. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so how does this work? You're bringing down this group from New York, and they're going to perform in someone's house in their living room, right?
Absolutely, yep.
And they're the Balesmen.
Yes.
Let's take a really quick listen to what they sound like. Here's the Balesmen.
Crazy rhythm, there's a doorway. I'll go my way, you go your way. Crazy rhythm from now on with you. Here's where we have a showdown. I'm too high hat, you're too low down. Crazy rhythm from now on, we're through. They say that when a highbrow meets a lowbrow walking along Broadway, soon the highbrow hears no brow.
Dance moves.
Absolutely.
And and so you, people need to go to boldcitycircuit.com to register to attend?
Yeah, basically, since it's in someone's home, we try to keep it as private as possible. So if you buy a ticket, we'll send you the address and we'll see you there, basically.
How fun is that?
Yeah, we do one a month. So if it's not your style, then there's going to be probably, you know, someone doing hip hop next month and someone doing real Americana folk the next month. So
what a great idea. So go to boldcitycircuit.com and check out the show of it's the Balesmen. They are a New York gypsy jazz group, and this will be in someone's home. So you have to register to attend, and then they will let you know the location. All shows are donation-based. $10 to $20 is the sweet spot, or you could always give more. So, Pamela, what a great idea. Thanks for bringing this to town. Have fun.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's boldcitycircuit.com. The show is Monday night. Speaking of things to do, lots of happenings all around town this weekend. Contributor Matt Pittman of Maine Events Jax is here now with some picks. Hey, Matt, good morning.
Hi, good to see him.
Okay, we just listened to some kind of old school music.
Sure.
And this show that's coming to the TU Bandstand really evokes that too.
This is amazing. So the FSCJ Artist Series continues to bring some of the biggest and best shows to the Times Union Center. This is just another one. I was seeing reviews this week. Everyone's loving it. And it is called Bandstand. And you can get details at FSCJArtistSeries.org. There's one show tonight, two shows tomorrow, two shows on Sunday as well. But this comes from the three-time Tony winner and Hamilton choreographer. I would mention his name, but I'm going to butcher it. So I won't. But it's an amazing show, and it brings back the days of the early 1940s when the war is over and people are coming back.
Yeah.
And this group creates a band, and you can actually see it live this weekend over at the Times Union Center, FSCJArtistSeries.org.
Okay, also Friday night at 8, Jay and Silent Bob come to the Florida Theater. How about that?
If you're a fan of Jay and Silent Bob, of course, Kevin Smith of the movie Clerks, that's where he kind of made his stay. But now the movie Jay and Silent Bob reboot, this is the roadshow that's going to be over at the Florida Theater. Now get this, not only can you see the movie, Kevin Smith's going to be there. So right after the movie, you get a nice Q&A with the director.
That'll be fun.
And so that's going to be fun, but floridatheater.com. Tickets still available for $29.50.
That'll be a lot of fun. Okay, Saturday, 3 to 7 p.m., it's the 7th annual Riverside Craft Beer Festival right there at the Riverside Arts Market.
That's right. The Riverside Arts Market every single week, and you can go down there in Riverside under the Fuller Warren Bridge. That goes on from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m., but now you got the Craft Beer Festival right after. $50 is general admission. VIP is $60. It'll get you that nice extra hour of beer that everybody loves. Mm-hmm. But over 100 different craft beers are going to be there. Some amazing food trucks and live music, so you can go to RiversideCraftBeerFestival.com.
Okay, live music at the St. Augustine Amphitheater Sunday night. John Fogerty.
Come on, legend.
I know.
Legend
he
right
is.
Here in our area on the First Coast. You can see it over at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Fair warning, there's only a few tickets left available, so you may be having to look on StubHub, something like that. But go to theamp.com. Tickets start out a little expensive, but I mean, it's a legend.
It's your chance to see him while he's still touring out there. And then last but not least, the running of the Bulls 5K is kicking off Sunday morning downtown at Intuition Aleworks. This is sort of a recreation of the famous running of the Bulls in Spain.
All right, so you're thinking, how does this work?
Right,
everybody, if you are running this 5K, you're encouraged to wear a white shirt. So it kicks off at Intuition Aleworks. And then we have the Jacksonville Roller Girls. They are your bulls.
They're the bulls.
And so on the entire course, they're running around and they're, quote unquote, hitting you with some red markers. So it's fun and it's for a great cause, the ARC Jacksonville. So to get details, go to arcjacksonville.org. Have fun this weekend. But that's a great way to get involved, get some exercise, have some fun, and you get to enjoy Intuition. So
yeah,
why not?
For sure. Don't they always wear the white shirts with the red scarves when
Yeah. So I normally do like the, quote unquote, celebrity matador. I'm out of town this weekend, so I'm going to miss it. But I told Julia and everybody with the ARC, I was like, I'm going to plug it as much as I can. So hopefully there's going to be a good attendance on Sunday. But again, go to arcjacksonville.org.
And Matt Pittman, always good to see you. Have
you
fun
too.
This weekend. Thanks for stopping by.
Of course.
Is with Main Events Jax. We'll close with a little bit of some John Fogerty for you guys. Enjoy this. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our director is Josh Torres. Heather Schatz is the show producer. And we want your feedback. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back here again tomorrow with our Friday roundtable. Let's connect then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.
TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services,